A paper shuffle. The second case is Ferring v. Watson and Apotex, 2014-14-16. And we're going to hear from Mr. Boggs when he is ready on behalf of Watson. And what do you have to say about confidentiality? You waive it as well?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Thank you. We're ready when you
are. Okay, great. Thank you, Your Honors. So we were the other half of that case. And our case was a design around case. And in essence, our client set out and designed around Ferring's patents. You know, and that's encouraged behavior, of course, in our system. But it only works if the system stays true with what the patent claims say. And in the case of the Hatch-Waxman Act, looks at the actual product that will be marketed. And that did not happen here. The lower court committed a number of legal errors during our trial, and those errors in turn led to clearly erroneous fact-finding. We are in a position here to reverse the ultimate judgment of infringement under 271E and 271A. Now the errors, there were many. The highlights, the court found the ANDA manufacturing specifications to be irrelevant as a matter of law in his analysis. That's clearly wrong. Secondly, the court read out of the claims the requirement that the modified release materials actually had to modify the release of the active ingredient. Also wrong. And the court erred when it read out of the claims the requirement that the dissolution rate actually be measured by the USP27. As we just heard, the USP is specified in the claims and required by the claims. So first, through the urging of Ferring, the district court found that the Synovian case stands for the proposition that in a 271E case, ANDA manufacturing specifications are irrelevant as a matter of law. We can see that in the appendix at 2209 to 2210. Of course, that's simply not correct. This is directly contrary to Glaxo. And as a result, the district court did not consider all of the amendments to Watson's ANDA and all of the changes in Watson's ANDA product.
What are the clearest, simplest reasons why you don't infringe Ferring patents?
The simplest and most direct reason is what was found to infringe were the 17
cases. Take the 739 patent.
The 739 patent, The court found that that the cores of the product would infringe if they were made at 17 kP pressure. The logic being that that particular core would produce...
Well, the hardness, 17 kP, is not in the claims.
That's true, but the argument was that a 17 kP core would produce the dissolution profile that you see in the claims, the water dissolution test.
Are what we're looking at here the core, the dissolution rate of the core, or the dissolution rate of the coated tablet, which is what's actually administered to a patient?
Well, as it unfolded, the court looked at both.
Well, I understand what the court did. I'm saying, is the proper approach here to look at the core or the coated tablet? Because it seems to make a difference in terms of infringement.
Yeah, our position has always been that this product, the patent, was directed to a finished pharmaceutical product.
Which would be the coated tablet.
The coated tablet, yes.
I mean, isn't that a simple argument as to why there's no infringement, because the coated tablet doesn't have the dissolution rate that's specified?
Yes, that is one of that is the reason for the coated tablet. But the court was considering the cores standing alone as well.
The court was, but the question is, should the court have been looking to the core, or should the court have been limited to the coated tablet?
The court should have been limited to the coated tablet, yes.
And what is the ANDA show about the coated tablet?
The ANDA shows about the coated tablet would not infringe.
Is there a dispute about that?
There is, yes.
Well, what does the claim say? It says 739 patent, 100% in 20 minutes? These are claim limitations, Mr. Boggs. I'd assume that
the claim would have them in hand. Yeah, the claim limitation
in
question is less than 70% by weight at about 45 minutes. And their evidence showed at 17 kP, 71 at 45 minutes.
Well, I thought your product was 16% at 45 minutes, which is less than 70%. Isn't your strongest argument that 100% at 120 and your 37%, which is not about 100%?
The coated product is actually the reverse. The coated product is much slower than these specifications require. The core, which is what the court was looking at, is a faster, an immediate release formulation that happened to hit the 70%.
You said the core.
Yes.
But you say that's the wrong material.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, proceed. Your time is running.
All right. So in the end, when the court did not consider our manufacturing specifications, it did not ultimately consider the product that was ultimately going to be marketed.
What is it in the what did the court overlook that would have shown?
Well, in our ANDA specifications, our manufacturing specifications, we have a requirement that the target for pressure. The target for pressure is 15 kP. And there's a manufacturing spec that says when it gets to 16 kP, turn it back to 50.
Why are you arguing kP when that's not in the claims? And you want to be free from the claims?
Well,
why aren't you targeting the claims?
Well, the relationship that was established was between the pressure and the dissolution profile. That's the link.
Well, I'm not sure that that's true. There doesn't seem to be any consistent relationship between hardness and the dissolution profile. Look at the numbers. They seem to go up and down without rhyme or reason.
I agree with that, Your Honor. And we did argue that, as a factual matter, the data is not linear. There's no answer, really, to that question.
You want to talk about validity? That's another aspect of your claim, of your argument.
Yes, I do. Validity, as I said, we believe that the court read out a lot of limitations of this claim. But at the end of the day, what happened here is that we have a 650 milligram tablet of tranexamic acid. Tranexamic acid was not new. There existed in the prior art 500 milligram tablets of tranexamic acid.
Didn't the FDA put this on a fast track? Isn't that a secondary consideration that's very powerful?
No, it's not, Your Honor. That just means that there wasn't a product that was currently approved by the FDA.
Doesn't that go to unmet need?
No, it doesn't. This is a worldwide view here. There was plenty of tranexamic acid tablets in the world. They were approved worldwide. They were even approved in the United States. They simply hadn't been marketed by Pfizer, it was. So that's not an unmet need. There simply was no need. What was needed was somebody to market it. There's no nexus there with the invention.
The market system wasn't working? There was a need that wasn't being met, and Ferry met it and gets no credit for that? In terms of obviousness evaluation?
And not in a patent law sense, Your Honor. That has nothing to do with whatever invention they had. Tranexamic acid tablets had already been approved in the United States.
At 650 with release relates?
No, at 500 milligrams. But the key here is that the dosage, the daily dosage in the prior art that was known was 3,000 to 4,000 milligrams per day. The cyclocapron tablets that were available were 500 milligram tablets, as I said, and it was recommended for a patient to take two of those four times a day to hit the target of 4,000. The patent claims say 650 milligrams. You take two of those three times a day, and you get 3,900 milligrams, right smack in the middle of the prior art, what the prior art teaches. Now, that's math. That's math. That's not inventive. The tablets themselves in the body are not any different than those 500 milligram tablets from the bioequivalent standpoint. The only difference they can point to is this out-of-the-body water test, which from a therapeutic standpoint doesn't mean a thing.
You're well into your rebuttal time. Do you want to continue the...
I'll save the rest of my time.
All right. Mr. Brown.
Good morning, Your Honor.
And I assume the confidentiality isn't yours.
Yes, Judge Lurie, the confidentiality, I believe, is all Watson's, and to the extent there is any fair and confidentiality, we'll waive it right now. May it please the Court, let me begin with the coded test.
You don't mention 271A infringement in your brief. Does that mean you've given up on it?
Not at all, Judge Dyke, that's where I was going to begin. Counsel said there was a dispute over infringement of the coded tablets. In fact, our position is there was no dispute, that there were samples that were tested.
No, wait, I'm not in the E yet. I'm talking about 271A. You don't discuss that in your brief. I mean, isn't that a waiver of the argument that there's 271A infringement?
It's not a waiver, Judge Dyke. We discussed the bases for affirming the district court's findings under 271A and E. And what we talk about is specific samples of commercial tablets that were tested and infringed. And in fact,
but you disregard addressing the 271A finding.
I don't agree, Judge Gibrania. We do address why the basis for the judge finding 271A infringement. Again, there were commercial samples that were available in the litigation that were tested. Now, I can see that our focus in litigation was 271A.
Let's talk about 271A. Why does the ANDA show that the coated tablets infringe under 271A?
Why does the ANDA show? Well, there's two. All right, so there are two issues that were disputed for infringement. There was the modified release material and the dissolution. As far as modified release material, it's all over the ANDA that the components modify the release of the tranexamic acid.
No, we'll come back to that. Let's stick with the other issue.
Okay, you want to focus on
problem.
Dissolution. The dissolution, the testing of the ANDA is in simulated gastric fluid. We have testimony that's equivalent, but in fact we had samples of their product that were tested. They were tested in four different labs. Every single lab showed that certain of the samples met the dissolution limitations. And in fact, two of those labs were Watson's own labs, their internal lab and a lab they hired. Their expert witness, Watson's expert witness, looked at those test results and he said, yes, they meet the requirements of the patent claims. So there was no dispute. It's mathematics. You can't dispute it. Those samples tested, commercial samples tested
in French. 7 out of 350 or something.
It depends on how you do the math, Judge Dyke. If you look at specific batches, it was by their own testing, their own samples, 16% of two batches. That's what's permitted under the ANDA, up to at least 16% infringement. If you add in the samples we tested, by our evidence, it was 35% of one of the commercial lots. That's about a third of their lot is infringing. The judge found that constituted evidence of infringement under 271E and A, and that's what we explained in detail in our brief.
But quite apart from the samples, let's look at the ANDA itself. Isn't there a dissolution profile in the ANDA?
There is a dissolution profile in the ANDA, yes. Greater than 80% at 90 minutes, but it's measured in simulated gastric fluid, so it doesn't directly address the claims, which are water-based tests. We would argue that it's equivalent, and we had testimony that based on the ANDA specifications, they infringe under the doctrine of equivalence. But because it's a water-based test and the ANDA specification is a different fluid, simulated gastric fluid, we tested actual product samples. Those samples showed infringement up to at least 16% of the time for certain batches by their evidence. If you include our evidence, up to 35% of the time for specific commercial batches.
Mr. Brown, let me ask about the 90-minute data. The Watson product seemed to be 29% 90 minutes, and the claims of two of Farron's patents were not less than about 50. 29% sure is a whole lot less than about 50.
We didn't argue that 29% was greater than 50, if that's your question, Judge Lurie.
That means non-infringement.
For that specific sample, there were multiple samples tested. And the evidence was that up to 16% of certain batches, undisputed evidence, infringed. And yes, if only 16% infringed, that does presume that others don't meet the claims, but they're not allowed to infringe at all. And they're infringing with certain commercial batches by their own evidence, by their own expert's admission, up to 16% of the time. That's not allowed. That's not permitted.
In 120 minutes, 37%, which doesn't meet the limitation of about 100.
I could agree with that, Judge Lurie. Again, that's that evidence. If you know, they can go and manufacture something non-infringing. It doesn't allow them to go and manufacture something infringing as well. And the fact is that they had commercial batches of product that contained up to 16% infringing.
What does the ANDA request?
The ANDA requests, the ANDA has a specific composition of the product and has a specific dissolution limitation. Now, this isn't...
And how about 120 minutes? What's it requesting?
I don't think there is a... my memory, Judge Lurie, is that they have a specification and it's greater than 80% at 90 minutes. That's it. And it's tested in simulated gastric fluid. That wasn't an issue that was litigated because we had actual products to test. We did that instead. So
in your view, this is a Glaxo case.
I would view it...
Sanovian case.
I I would view it as both a Glaxo and a Sanovian case, Judge Dyke. What I would say is we had evidence-specific samples, 271A and E, and the fact that their ANDA specification allowed production of up to 16% of batches with those infringing samples shows that then under Sanovian, the scope of their approval encompasses infringing formulations. We just had direct evidence.
What's the effect of the amendment that that they secured in this case?
I don't think there's any effect. Now, first of all, that amendment goes to the hardness level, which is something that we set aside for a minute, of the cores. There's no evidence that makes any difference whatsoever with respect to the infringement of the coated tablets. There's no known relationship between tablet hardness and the dissolution of the coated tablets. There is, I believe someone said there was no relationship, there is in fact a relationship between hardness of the uncoated tablet and dissolution, and I can give you a site.
Uncoated.
Uncoated. Did I misspeak? It's 14840, and it's a graph, and it shows as you get harder, it goes slower. It's a clear one-way direction, so there is a relationship. Now, with respect to the uncoated tablets, Judge Dyke, they didn't argue on appeal that the judge made any error of law in finding infringement with respect to the uncoated tablets, and therefore that argument is not available to them now, even if you think there's some issue with that.
They're arguing that the coated tablets are the relevant thing. What about the weight limitations in the patent claims?
Yes.
It strikes me that your own witness said that having particular material in the tablet doesn't necessarily have a material effect. And so how do you deal with that? Most of your testimony is, well, having this material can have an effect.
Well, I don't think that's true, Judge Dyke. Again, we're faced with a situation where
we
have no bias.
Show me, I've looked at this testimony. Show me where the testimony says that in their tablets, this material does have an effect.
Well, it's abundant in the brief.
It's abundant in the brief, and I read the references. Show me one.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to...
The testimony says can. Mm-hmm. Repeatedly says can have an effect, can have an effect. It doesn't, in my view, say it does have an effect. You agree that the claim construction requires that it does have an effect, right?
The claim language is it's a modified release material. The judge interpreted that as a material that modifies the release.
That does have an effect, right?
Well, I think modified implies does have an effect.
Trying to use the claim. So where's the testimony that it does have an effect?
Well, I would look at, first of all, there were three main pieces of evidence, and the testimony of Dr. Williams is at 951 of the record and also 1999 of the record. And he relied on three pieces of evidence. Their ANDA itself talks about how the components of their uncoated tablet modify the release so that it's neither too fast nor too slow. That is an admission by them.
Just show me one piece of testimony where they say that that there is a ingredient that satisfies the weight percentage that does have an effect instead of can have an effect.
Well, again, Judge Dyke, it was the pages I cited. I could maybe read them out loud to you, but
yeah,
I'm talking about the evidence.
Read one of them out loud to me. Show me where they say it. I mean, I've read this testimony, and it seems to me it's dealing with can rather than does.
Well, I'm finding it. Let me point out that there were admissions by their own.
You're supposed to be familiar with this. You know, it's a,
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
All right, go ahead.
I believe I identified the page number. Go to 1999. Did you hear Dr. Marin?
Where are you reading from?
I'm sorry, this is A1999.
Yeah.
Did you hear Dr. Murren testify that only the excipients in the color coding of Watson's generic tranexamic acid tablets constitute the modified release for these products? That's what I understood. Yes, I heard him. Did you agree with Dr. Murren? I do not. Would you explain the basis for your disagreement with Dr. Murren, referencing PTX 381, about which he testified in Ferring's case in chief? So in my opinion, it's not just the color coding, because Watson uses in their granules a hypomellose as well as another material called glycerol bayonate. And glycerol bayonate is hydrophobic, and both of those can, along with the other ingredients in there,
can.
As I tested.
That's
food.
The point. Can. Doesn't say does. He says can.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe the implication is that, in fact, it does. And the fact that it can sitting on a shelf, maybe not, but in a formulation, I think is the point, is you use it in a formulation that modifies the release. And that's the...
Well, your own witness said, that sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't, depending on formulation.
But he said that here it does. He offered an opinion of infringement.
No, he didn't say does. He said can.
Well, I disagree, Your Honor. He offered an opinion of infringement. He found that this constituted a modified release material. He didn't say a maybe. He says it does infringe. And again, it's based on admissions by Watson himself. Their own ANDA says it does modify the release, so it's either too fast nor too slow. Their own expert formulators said that we designed a controlled release core that has modified release materials. That's admissions of their formulators, one of whom was a 30B6 witness. Those are admissions. Again, their own patent application, which they admitted describes their product, describes it as having a modified release core. That was the evidence that the district court accepted.
Their own patent describes weights that are outside the range of your patent, right?
It does describe weights down to 1%, yes, but their formulation has higher weights. By their own admission, at least two of the ingredients modify the release, the hydroxypropylmethyl cellulose, which is approximately 7%, the glycerol bayonet, which is smaller, around 2%. Again, that's well over 5%, which is the broadest of limitations. But it's the components acting together, the patent teaches, act to modify the release, and in fact, the Watson inventors agree. The core itself, they say, is a modified release core. Those ingredients act together to modify the release. Again, there is abundant evidence that supported this district court's decision that there was a modified release material. And it's unfair to point to isolated snippets of testimony that don't reveal the record as a whole.
You pointed the testimony to me, not me to you.
you were correct, Judge Sykes. I just disagree with the reading of the testimony. I think it's very clear that Dr. Williams was offering an opinion of infringement. He wasn't saying maybe infringement. He was saying they infringed. His opinion was this limitation was met. There's no equivocation there. He found it. He offered a testimony that was met. The district court accepted that and agreed that. And again, there's abundant evidence. I would invite Your Honor to look to the product development report beginning at A013793 of the record, and page after page after page, Watson described how small, minute variations in the amount of those ingredients in the formulation change the dissolution profile. Change is modifying the release. It's indisputable based on the evidence of record. I know I'm running out of time. I wanted to briefly address validity to the extent that the court has any questions about that. I think what's important, maybe the most important point I'd like to make is that there was unrebutted testimony that the formulation design here was unprecedented. What these inventors had come up with was a small slowing of the dissolution of the stomach to alleviate GI side effects, but they were able to balance that with the absorption of the active ingredient such that it got into the bloodstream at the same rate of an immediate-release type formulation. And therefore, it was the best of both worlds, the type of blood absorption of immediate release while alleviating side effects as you would see with something that slowed the release. And two of our expert witnesses, Dr. Williams and Dr. Slotchuk, testified in all their years of experience, they'd never seen this approach ever before. That testimony stood unrebutted. Watson had the opportunity to present rebuttal testimony to that. They declined to do so. And so at least that piece of very powerful evidence supports the district court's determination that the patent claims at issue here were valid. And it appears Your Honors are running out of questions for me. rather than belabor it, I think I'll concede my last 30 seconds.
Thank you, Mr. Browning. Mr. Boggs has a little less than 3 minutes left to rebut.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
You have a little less than 3 minutes, as appears on your desk, for rebuttal.
Okay.
Does the ANDA have a dissolution profile in it which is outside the patent range?
Our ANDA does not have a water dissolution profile in it at all. It doesn't contain that. It's not an important specification of a drug product. What's important are dissolution tests like SGF, things that are going to simulate.
So we have to look at the actual product.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. One thing I want to add to the modified release material discussion that you were having with counsel is that when we talk about things that we said about the modified release materials or whether they were or they weren't, you have to understand that, what we were concerned about in our patent and in our ANDA was how things react in the body. These modified release materials that you see in being claimed in this patent relate to the water dissolution outside the body. And one of the arguments you frequently hear with this whole patent is they behave differently, whether it's outside the body or inside the body. So what we have said relates to in the body, not the dissolution profile that you see in the patent. Now, one thing I want to go back to is the claims require measurement according to the USP 27 method. When you measure according to the USP 27 method, when you follow it, it's in the claims, it says measure according to the USP 27 method, it requires the measurement of 6 samples. And in fact, that's what you see when you read the patent. You see measurement of 6 samples. The reason why you measure 6 samples is you're measuring one batch. You're measuring one large formulation, one pot of drug product. And any testing method has variation. So what the USP, which is a scientific method, requires that you look at 6 of them and you try to get a uniform result. One test, one measurement, does not give you any sort of reliable result. And that's why they require 6. Those are the additional points I wanted to make, unless you had it. Any additional questions?
Thank you, Mr. Boggs.
Thank you.
Case is submitted.
All rise.